you know, it was truthfully, it was just like, it was just go get it. Like, that was my mentality. Like, just kind of, and I don't know why this like came to my head, but it's just like, just tunnel vision, just go handle business and get out of there. You know, that was the goal. It's like, this is something you've had on your mind for 2 years. You've been talking about it. My girlfriend's sick of me saying I'm going to break it now. You know, she's just rolling her eyes every time I say I'm going to get it. You know, my family's been hearing it for a while. You know, threw some teasers out there to my teammates, you know, post about the day before, but it's like, all right, you've been talking about it. Like, now go do it. Like, all right, tough guy. Like, you talk a big game. Like, can you do it? So my mentality was just go execute the race plan. And going in, it was like, I knew just from training, you know, I'd run a 2:16 marathon as a workout, got my trials qualifier a month before as a workout, warm up, cool down, but after the marathon running 2:16, tied my PR to the exact second. So I knew I was really fit.
Hello, everyone. This is Vikas, and you are listening to Run with FitPage. This is episode number 152, and we are resuming speaking with the speakers. I'm done having solo conversations for a bit now, and I thought it's time to get the experts back to speak to athletes, researchers, nutritionists, and other coaches who could give you some more information and tips on how to improve your running. Our today's guest is Charlie Lawrence. If you have been in the running world, very recently you would have seen he created a 50-mile world record. And by the way, he is all of 28. I just started to feel so much older, and I also started to feel how much more I need to do in life. It just gives so much inspiration speaking with Charlie, not because he has created the world record, but because the way he looks at life, because the way he looks at all of his achievements, all of his next goals, and how he systematically, very rigorously, he goes on to execute all of that in training. And then result is obvious. What you can't replicate in training, you can't get that result for sure, right? Miracles do happen, but for that, you need to be ready. You need to be ready with your best self. And that's what you will see in the conversation with Charlie today. The nutrition that he executed, you will see his training that he planned for, what he executed, and more importantly, you will witness his mindset. Oh my goodness, it is something that all of us should learn something from for sure. It is one of the most inspirational and more importantly, more relatable conversations I've had so far. Let's welcome Charlie to the show and learn a bit more about running and almost everything about life in general. Let's welcome Charlie to the show. Mr. Lawrence, welcome to the show. And it's a weekly show, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Yeah, no, stoked to be here. Looking forward to it ever since, like I said, we lined it up. It's been on the calendar, so happy to be here.
Awesome. And formally, again, congratulations for making the 50-mile world record. It is fantastic. And we will talk all about it because I'm sure our listeners are super excited to hear how do you go and do it and at this early age? Because it seems like ultra running, you start to mature as you start to age. And I would want to be very interested in seeing what did you do to get here. But let's get into your introduction and see where you came from and how your childhood was.
Yeah. So I guess we'll give you the kind of the early beginnings, upbringing, how I kind of got into running. So currently, well, I'll start where I'm at now. Currently live and train in Boulder, Colorado. Like we were talking off air before we started, I've been here for about 3.5 years. Prior to that was in Michigan for a short stint with a pro group there. But prior, I was in Minnesota. So kind of how I got into it. And I'll also back up and say, you know, right now, full-time training, that's what I do. You know, pretty fortunate to be able to have that be my job as a professional runner, ultra runner. From kind of early beginnings, I grew up in a family of coaches. So in a small town in central Minnesota, over here in the US, where my mom was a cross country coach, my dad was a track coach and football coach. So I knew I was going to be in some sort of, you know, sport growing up. My parents actually ended up getting divorced when I was in first grade. So that next fall in second grade, I was either go to daycare or go to cross country practice with my mom. And I'm like, I was a pretty competitive young kid, like definitely like a hothead. I was like, you know, I'm going to try to beat up on the junior high kids, the seventh, eighth, ninth graders. So as a second grader, you know, I was going to practice and you know, I know they hated it, but I was, you know, essentially one step in them the entire time and, you know, racing in practice, trying to beat the junior high kids as a second grader. So, been in it from a very, very, very young age. Didn't go every single day. There are some days, truthfully, as like a second grader, third grader, I'd rather go to daycare and nap. But when I showed up to practice, I was going to run pretty hard for, you know, 2 or 3 miles. So whatever the junior high kids had or whatever workout they had on the calendar. So, yeah, always kind of knew I was going to run from that point, really second grade. And, you know, I was fortunate to, you know, won a couple state championships in the state of Minnesota, got recruited by several universities over here, decided to go to the University of Minnesota, run for the Gophers there. I'm not sure if people are familiar with like Hassan Mead, Ben Blankenship, both Olympians from Minnesota. You know, they were there. I watched them when I was in middle school and high school. So had a heck of a program. And Coach Placentia, Steve Placentia there, ran for him for, I guess, what was 5 years. I redshirted my freshman year. But really kind of had a really, like, he developed me through and through, you know, took me as a, I would say undertrained, but didn't run a ton of mileage in high school, got up to like 60, 65 miles. So like, you know, roughly 100K a week, I guess, maxed out in high school. And then Plies just gradually just kind of built me up, and I responded super, super well to aerobic work. And, you know, was pretty good in college, not great. It was, you know, all Big Ten, all region, pretty competitive there, especially in cross country. So we always just knew that I'd, you know, hopefully make a good transition to the roads. Unfortunately, you know, did post collegially marathon debut, had a pro contract after that and joined Hanson's Brooks. I was with them for about 14, 15 months in Michigan, prior to the 2020 Olympic marathon trials, left after the trials there and moved out to Boulder. So, that's kind of my, you know, in a nutshell, you know, my running career. Obviously we'll dive into lots of other parts of it, but, that's kind of my upbringing, how I got into running, and, you know, to where I'm at today is just, you know, living, training in Boulder. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Sweet. So as you were growing up, you said you had an option to go to daycare or go, just run. Did you get formally coached back then, or you would just go out and run as fast as you can?
It was, so with my mom being the coach, obviously she's like, don't do anything stupid or don't embarrass me, you know, as a kid. but again, I was pretty cocky. I was pretty arrogant. So like, I'd say it's just some dumb stuff as like, you know, I trash talk some of the junior hikers, like, you can't keep up with me, or, you know, just stuff like that. So, it wasn't, you know, sometimes it was structured. I just remember sometimes going out and, you know, just doing the miles with, you know, if we have a town loop that's like 3 miles, just going and doing that loop. But I also remember like purposely like hopping in and out of like interval workouts too. It's like, I'll run the first couple reps. If I get tired, I'll wait, let them get more tired, and then I'll hop back in and try to beat them again. this is like a second grader. So, you know, there was some structure for sure, 'cause they're doing proper workouts, you know, around, 'cause they're actually racing. I'm just kind of showing up and hanging out with mom and usually, you know, trying to stay out of trouble if I can. So.
Got it. And as you grew, did you know that running was something that you wanted to do because you started to enjoy and you saw this, that you were winning, you were beating up the other, maybe more senior kids, and that was giving you excitement. That's how you kept running?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I played basketball too, up through 10th grade in high school. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that I was exponentially better at running, and I'm just hyper, hyper competitive. I always wanted to win. Was like I mentioned earlier, was just kind of a bit of a hothead, hyper competitive. And that was just, I knew I could go one, get a scholarship, and two, just really try to see how good I can be in the sport. So, yeah, that's kind of was my transition to running. My dad played a season in the NFL. It's preseason. So like he has a great football background, a great athlete himself. But for me, you know, I'm 5'10", 100, and in high school I was 5'7", 5'8", you know, 115 pounds, 20 pounds. So it's like, you're not going to, like, good luck making, yeah. You know, good luck even going and playing college ball, like, you know, just do what you're good at. So, and that was the thing. I was just, you know, in a small town, pretty small environment. Wasn't hard to win a lot of races, truthfully. So like I can count on one hand how many times I lost in high school, you know, like it was, you know, pretty easy coming up, just being from a small town, a small area, to get a lot of these wins. So, and that you just build off that confidence, the winning, you just get addicted to that and thriving. So that's kind of just from an early age, really about, you know, I knew I was going to do it in probably fifth, sixth grade. I'm like, I'm for sure running cross country and track, you know, no matter what. So.
Got it. You said you can count maybe a handful number of times how many times you lost. And on one side, it's great to have a winning streak. But what I wanted to understand is, whenever you lost, what did you do about it? Because this one is so important, right? And it's so important running. It just humbles you. And whenever you lost, how did you look at coming back up?
Oh, I mean, I hated it. So like I was, again, I was hyper competitive, a little bit of like, I don't want to say a head case, but I would just like, yeah. I hated it so much that I would just like, I remember just like finishing a race and like, this is my junior of high school. And like, my girlfriend at the time, like I didn't talk to her like the rest of the day. Like I lost, like she was at the race and I didn't know how to respond. And I was just so pissed off that I just like, I still had a race to do after it. But I'm like, well, I'm just gonna go like bury this person now because they're also racing the 2 mile. So like, it was just get back to work and don't let it happen again. Like I'd go analyze these races, and like my stepdad, actually, he'd go to almost every race I had and he'd film them. So I'd go back and like watch the races and analyze like, oh, I shouldn't have made a move here. I should have like tried to put in like a bigger surge, you know, a quarter mile in to try to drop him here. It's like instead of having it come down to the last 100 meters. So yeah, I was super, super analytical. At the time I didn't deal with it well. I mean, I just wouldn't talk to anyone. I would just be upset, be mad. Yeah. Even to my dad's like, you need to grow up and mature a little bit, which I definitely did. But just being hyper competitive, you know, I just didn't enjoy it. Wasn't fun, you know? So,
No, I can totally relate to it. We all grow to it, right? Over a period of time. And when we have grown older, we feel, why did we do it? Isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly.
As you matured to doing longer distances, as you moved to half marathon and marathon, how did you see running changing for you? Because running on track and cross country is very different than running a half marathon, marathon, and later ultra marathons. Did you do things differently? Did you start to put structure to your training, more structure to your training? And if you did, what were some of the things that you tried to change? And I'm trying to build a narrative to go towards your world record soon. And so I thought, let's try and understand, how did you graduate from running very, very fast to running very, very fast for longer distances as well?
Yeah. So, and that was the thing. And this is kind of a credit to my mom and then my college coach, Steve Placentia. So I'll call him, his nickname is Plaz. So if I say Plaz, it was my college coach, Steve Placentia. He was a 2-time Olympian for the U.S., 1990 U.S. 10K champion. One of the best coaches in the country, period. So throughout even like middle school through high school, you'd see my mileage, and I still have all my logs and stuff where my mileage was just gradually increasing. Throughout the summer, it's building that base. Volume intensity increases, reps increase. Even through high school, you know, like my peak summer was, I hit 65 the summer before my senior year of high school. So like decent amount, like I said, you know, about 100K, a little over. And then kind of going into college, same thing, like Plaz knew my background. He's like, cool, like let's just keep building that aerobic base. And obviously stack work on top of that. So it was, you know, 75, 80 going into my freshman year, 85, 90, 90 to 100. 110, then 115 from my last year. So just a very, very gradual progression. Nothing, you know, nothing steep. No crazy exponential curves. And I just responded super, super well to the aerobic work, like any sort of long tempos, long runs. They felt easier for me than most people. Like I could just go knock them out. Obviously, you're working hard. Like it's nothing we do is easy with running, but it just came a little easier to me, and I enjoyed them too. So, those long runs, all that work, just responded and adapted super, super, super well. So with Plaz, it was just, you know, get that base, then start stacking work on top of it. So, and he'd always said too, really from about my third year in college, cause I was, you know, even as a freshman, like my first ever race, I was number two on the team. So in cross country. So I was like competitive from the gun in cross country. Just loved the longer distances, the 8K, 10K, on grass where it takes a little more strength. You know, it was good on the track too. Wasn't winning Big Ten titles or anything like that. Was in the race until it got really serious, you know, and then guys like Morgan McDonald or like Ben Flanagan, both NCAA champions, would take it to me the last couple laps because they had the pure speed. I just had the strength. So in cross country, it was just like Plaza always just said, you're going to be great on the roads. You know, like what great meant was kind of up for interpretation, right? I'm like, I didn't see this as a possible career, you know, post-collegially. My goal just kind of in my head was like, let's go try to qualify for the 2020 Olympic marathon trials and then go get a real job, work a real job and also qualify, you know, then essentially be done running after that. It so happened that, you know, after college I finished up, you know, again, super like solid, all Big Ten, all region, was never an All American. Unfortunately, that's the one thing that I didn't have in college that I wish I had, but, I'll take my world record over that now, truthfully. With what Plaz had said, you know, going back to like, you're going to be good on the roads. Pretty fortunate. We finished up really like the spring of 2018 was my last year competing in track. And then have you heard of Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, Minnesota?
Yes, of course. Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, my dad went to the University of Minnesota Duluth. So up in Duluth, my mom has run the marathon 3 or 4 times. So I'd gone and watched her as a kid. And I was just like, well, like you're fit. You're coming off a track season. Like might as well go run a half marathon and just see how it goes. It's a month after track season. You're still fit. Like Plaz said, he'd like oversee my training for the next month. Like, you know, going up to Grandma's, I'm like, well, might as well go run the half, see what I can do. And going into that, everyone's like, oh, what's your goal? Like, I'm like, I don't know. Just run. I was like 65, 66. I'll be happy with that. You know, I think that's like achievable, 5 flats. I think I can do it. It just like went in with no expectations. Well, ended up running 64:14.
Wow.
And I like just kind of blew expectations out of the water. And I was like, okay, like, all right, like there's something to this, you know, like first one and this is kind of like early super shoes too, where it's like, you know, didn't really have super shoes. So like to pop that off and run, it's like, all right, we're doing all right. So, then right after that, everyone's like, you got to go run a marathon. You can qualify for the trials. That's easily a 215, 216, 217. So then we just slated like that was, you know, June of 2018. It's like, well, maybe let's try to run a marathon at the end of this year. So we picked CIM, Cal International Marathon, which is actually where Plaz did his debut and he won it in his debut. It's like, yeah, let's go see if we can get our qualifier. Unfortunately, you know, like was working full time. I was finishing my grad degree. Then got to 120 miles that kind of summer 2018 into that, like fall and winter, but long story short, ended up debuting in 2:16:10 in 2018 at Cal International.
Wow. So that was within a period of maybe about 7 months, 8 months, because it's in December, correct?
7 months. Correct. Yep. That June really, you know, finished up in May competing collegiately, didn't make the national meet. So it's like, well, like my collegiate career is over. Like, and I still loved running, still love racing. So it's like, let's go do Grandma's and that well enough. It's like, all right, let's go get your Olympic trials qualifier. So that was the goal. And obviously my goal going in was just run 2:19, which was the Olympic trial standard at the time. I remember having dinner with some people, you know, the night before and like, what's your goal? I'm like, just don't like, just get it run. I don't care if I run 2:18:59. I just want to get it. And it just felt, I don't want to say effortless because you're still working hard, you know, in a marathon, no matter what, but it felt pretty easy up until like 22, 23 miles. And I just like, you know, I'm checking my watch. I'm like, you're way ahead. I went through half and like 68 mid, and negative split it. It's like, if this is what marathoning is, like, this is easy, you know? You know, learn the hard way after that, that marathons don't always go the way you want them to. But, that one just went well. And then that's how I got my professional start. So, end up joining Hanson's Brooks, right after that. So big shout out to Kevin Hanson and Keith there. Obviously wouldn't be here without Kevin for giving me that opportunity. So, obviously just a historic program at the time. It was, they had Shadrach, B-Watt, you know, Dathan Ritzenhine, you know, he's still a friend of mine, mentor of mine with him being on Boulder still. So, well, I guess now, and you know, it was here in college, moved to Michigan, back to Michigan, well, Colorado here, college here in Colorado, you know, Eugene Beaverton with Nike, Oregon Project, all that. And then, you know, back to Michigan with Hanson. So, kind of cool being full circle now with him here and obviously being his teammate and joining. That's pretty, at the time when I joined, it was like, holy crap, I'm Dathan's teammate, which is something that I never thought would happen, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. NCIM being an absolute great race for fast times, and you're possibly one of the only people I've ever heard from that marathon can be easy. Trust me, it is. Yeah, it is not. Every time it just humbles you.
No. So that's the thing. Like it humbled me really badly. So that was my first marathon.
Great, right?
Yeah. Next one was the trials in 2020. I blew up. Like I lost my legs at like 14, 15 miles. Just went out too hard.
Too fast.
Yeah, and like, you know, I stuck to the plan at first, and here's where it was just immaturity. You know, Kevin Hansen was like, you know, run this pace, try to run like 5:14s. It's hard. It's a hard course. For the first lap, it was like an 8 mile loop. Then try to go like 5:10ish, and then go to work. See if you can negative split. And had I stuck to that, I think I could have gotten close. But me just being immature, like I wasn't in the lead pack, running like 5:14s per mile. I decided to shoot a gap after like 7 miles to the lead pack. I dropped like a 4:50 alone in the wind, in the cold to catch them. And I just essentially burnt all my matches trying to catch them. You know, running essentially a 3 minute K trying to close on this group. And just lost my legs, you know, 10 K later, essentially. And it was a long way home, ran 2:20. Yeah, ended up running 2:19 in marathon later the year, the marathon project, you know, went on 65 minutes trying to run 2:10, 2:11, ran 2:19, you know, another hard way to do it. So,
yeah,
not fun. So it humbles you.
It does. It like, this is a story that everybody can relate with, regardless of how much you train, at what level you train. It just, marathon is some other beast, and it gets onto you at some stage for sure. Now, before we get to your world record, I wanted to understand here, as you were building your mileage for half marathon and then later for marathon, from Granma to possibly CIM, what were, how your training block looked like? For example, why I'm asking this is because people are obsessed with getting faster paces, right? Almost all of us, whether recreational runners or elites, semi-elites, etc. And it would be important to understand, while you had a big tank already, but I'm sure for you to get faster at those distances, you needed to train fast and you needed to build even bigger aerobic base, etc. What did you actually do, if you want to talk about a training block or two, or how your training would look like during possibly speed phases?
Yeah, so just in general, kind of that I guess 2018 from like Granma's to CIM, right? Like I have coming off of a track season, like you're training for 5K, 10K. So you're pretty, I guess, what I'd call sharp at that point, doing a lot of speed. So at that point, it's like, you already got the legs. How can we just keep, let's add these marathon specific sessions, you know? So that was kind of the biggest thing for me there. And that build up from like Granma's to CIM was a lot different than obviously how I train now. Cause I was working a full-time job, still in grad school. I was running every morning at, my alarm was at 4:40 in the morning, out the door by 5 a.m., you know, going to training, getting my mileage in. But for me, it was still just maintaining like a sense of power and speed. So most of my weeks were pretty similar, where it's like, I have to be in the office around 7:30, 8 at the very latest. So it's like, I'm just trying to get my bang for my buck workouts. So it's like usually midweek, I would just go try to do like either a hill session or like up-tempo run. Like I'd go do like 2 minute hills, you know, like 5x2 minute hills, you know, jog down recovery, go home, like stretch, quick core, shower, go to work. And then the weekend I'd do like a Saturday workout. So like some sort of track session, whether it's, you know, K's. My favorite session still on the track is 400 repeats. I love just 20x400. 200 meter jog at 5K effort. That's one I literally did a variation of that on Friday. So for 3 days ago at this point. Then I do a Sunday long run. So that was kind of that block right there, just to feel like as efficient as possible at kind of marathon speed. And that's still my philosophy, is like, how can I make marathon pace feel easy? Then also, how can I make 50 mile pace, ultra pace feel easy? And for me, it's all kind of stems down to VO2 and speed work and power work. And honestly too, like I lift twice a week as well. I was being in the gym working on just that speed, neuromuscular efficiency, making sure everything's firing, super, super critical for me. But in that block specifically, it was pretty, you know, still lifting as well. That was typically like a Tuesday, Friday type stuff. Then going to the Wednesday hills, Saturday workout, then Sunday long run would be anywhere from, you know, 18 up to 25 miles at one point, just pretty, pretty honest, pretty hard. Like my biggest run was 25 miles that block. I averaged 5:51 per mile, for that run. So, that's something that, going back to what I mentioned earlier, I just had always adapted really well to just the aerobic work and the strength work. And I love the long runs with the team and all that, even in college. So, and eventually too, in my later years in college, Plaz gave me some free rein to like, if you want to go run 5:30 to 5:40 for the last half of the long run, like go do it. You know, you have the strength to do it. So you've adapted well. So that always kind of just gave me a little bit of quiet confidence that I could always go go rip long runs and stuff. And, you know, just that aerobic base just kept kind of growing, and I responded well to it or recover well from it, which has been great. So that's block specifically. It was, you know, like I said, power in the hills, speed on the track, just get your time on feet in a long run. The rest of the days were just kind of maintenance miles. The two, you know, Monday would always be pretty easy, just like a, and I try to double as well if I could after work. I worked in sales, so the longer I was in the office, the more money I made if I'm answering the phones, you know. So it's a hard balance, but yeah, when I could get home at, you know, 5:30, 6, go run, like get some more miles in and have dinner, call it a night. So yeah, that was really just kind of the key in that segment specifically. Obviously, what I do now is much different. You know, my life is based around training at this point, you know, where there was grad school, work, you know, and all that. So
sure. Let me understand that a little further. So on Saturdays, for example, you'll do speed workout, track workout, and then Sunday you'll go do long run. Your long run was not necessarily like a zone 2 kind of training, but it was faster, like tempos. What these the pace, like 5:51 was how far out it was from your goal pace of a marathon, for example?
So that one in particular, that was just kind of see how it feels. Like I remember that run, my first mile, and I remember it vividly because it was a really, really cold day in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I'm still training in Minneapolis. It was okay. Before I moved to Michigan. But yeah, it was like my first mile was just like, I knew I wanted to go a little quicker, but my first mile that day was like 6:40 or 6:38. And it was like, the goal is just progress it, you know, with see what the day gives you and progress. And that's one thing too. I've always just trained off pace. I've never trained off of heart rate, which is, you know, I have some buddies who are very competitive in triathlon, like pro triathletes out here in Boulder. And they're very big on, you know, being in zone 2, zone 3. All that for me, it's all just, we just got to go hit pace, you know? So, for that was just feel it out. And it ended up being just like a very, very, very long progression. You know, I remember running, I think the last mile was right around 5:20. But ended up averaging, ended up averaging, you know, 5:51 for the extent of it. So, the majority of the miles were like 6:10 to like 5:40-ish or, you know, 5:30 high, like 6 to 5:40, kind of right in that range and averaged it up. But you know, obviously at the end, if you have more juice, you pick it up and, you know, all that. So and that's the thing too, with like working a full-time job, I wasn't able to like structure the weeks exactly how I wanted. Like I would have preferred to have like a Tuesday hills or Tuesday tempo, a Friday track session for an extra day of recovery, then go to the long run on Sunday, which is typically like what I do now. Cause I can truthfully, so that'd be nice to have more structure, but it's like, I have the weekend relatively free from work. So it's like go to get the sessions in when you can. And so sometimes you don't feel great on that long run because you just had a hard workout the day before. It was just kind of just being gracious and kind of seeing what the day gave me. But I knew truly too, if I could hit the long run after a hard day of have a hard workout the day before, it's like you're responding well, you're recovering, and you're getting more fit. So that was kind of my mentality. Yeah. And I just enjoyed it, and you got to embrace that for sure.
Oh, perfect. And it's very helpful also because most of our listeners are the working professional and they train for world majors or other marathons, etc. And they also look for, while they strive for a balance, but it's not easy. Whether doing sales job, private equity, trading, or any other jobs, it's it gets demanding. So I think from within the constraints of time, whatever best is possible doing that is what is wise. And I guess that's what you did. So makes absolute sense. Moving to your world record, how did you then decide? You did the half marathon, you did the marathon. I saw you paced deaths for the 50K. And how did you now plan to go and make a world record? How did you think of this?
Yeah, so this actually really just kind of stem from pacing Dez. So, you know, I paced her in April of 2021 to that record. So, and I went into that, I just did it as a workout. I was like, I didn't taper. I doubled the day before, you know, just went into it as just kind of a long run workout. Because even in Boulder, I had done, you know, 26 miles at 5:50 pace at altitude over rolling terrain, you know, not that fast of surface. And Dez had just become kind of a friend of mine. And, you know, she told me that she wanted to do this goal. And I'm like, if I can help you, let me know. And ended up, you know, she's like, would love to have you pace me, you know, if you want to do that. And so for me, it was like, get in, learn from Dez, practice bottles and stuff. Cause I was running the US 50K champs 7 weeks after that race as well. So it's like, it's a good kind of simulator, practice bottles, do all that. But in, like, long story short, you know, Des broke the record. I was her pacer, but I mean, she did all the work, you know, like I was there keeping her company. She broke the record, all on her. My goal is just to not mess it up and keep her company. So like one, shout out to her, but two, like the pace we ran 5:47 pace per mile for 50K, when she broke the record. So for me in my head, I was just like, that felt pretty easy. Like truthfully, it was just felt like another long run, you know? So I did that, and in my head, a flip switch. I'm like, Walmsley's record for 50 miles is 5:48 pace. I just like paced Des for 50K, obviously shorter, 5:47 pace, and it was pretty easy. So I'm like, mentally, I'm like, I think I could probably do another 19 miles at that pace. So this is, you know, 2021. And so just, that's just kind of me internally, like telling myself that, like, that was pretty easy. I think I could do that for another 19 miles. So, that was really when the flip switch was kind of early 21, I guess that spring. Then I first kind of vocalized it to some friends, I guess, kind of that November. So really, you know, a little over 2 years ago, not at this point, that I wanted to go, that I thought I could go break the record. So, and my buddy at the time too, he was running ultra marathons that I told it to. And he goes, if you do it, you should do that Tunnel Hill. And I never heard of the race, but he's like, oh yeah, it's a flat, pretty fast course. You know, Camille has a 100-mile world record there. Zach has it there. You know, it's crushed gravel. So it's, you're not going to pound your quads as much as you do on pavement. So kind of by design, obviously not as fast of a surface, but if you're fit, it'll, you know, honestly, the saving of your quads will be more beneficial than the pavement, you know, or the surface. So yeah, it was about kind of 2 years out really from getting the record where I was like, I think I want to go get this record at some point.
Wow. Okay. And one is thinking of getting the record and another is training for it. How did you then go about training? How did you get those extra 19 miles that you thought you could train for and be at the same pace or faster?
Yeah. So it was this buildup was pretty unique. I wouldn't recommend it. So mm-hmm. I was injured like kind of all of 2022. So I got a grade 4 sacral stress fracture in January of 2022. I didn't race until February of this year of 23. It ended up flaring back up in the summer of 22. So honestly, I'd spent a lot of time just cross training, and building up for it. But with that being said, like the Olympic trials window due to COVID, it had opened up and it was a lot shorter this year. So me being injured when it opened, I didn't have a chance to go get my qualifier early. And I wasn't fit enough earlier this year to go get it. So it's like, one, if you consider yourself a good US marathoner, you better be at the Olympic marathon trials regardless. So I'm like, I need to go get that. And two, I'll get fit enough to where I can use it as a kind of a workout to get ready for Tunnel Hill. So really my segment officially started really like late June of this year. And it was just the same thing. You know, I ran grandma's half, didn't go well. I blew up. I went through 30:03 through 10K, trying to get my qualifier that way. Cause I knew I didn't quite have the legs yet and the miles underneath me to go run a great marathon. I could probably run 2:18, but I wanted to go for like a really good one if I did. So went for in the half, blew up, ran 65, like 36, you know, pretty, or 46, not a good race, you know, would have ran, you know, 35 minutes and change for the last, you know, 11K, like hard way to do it. Versus going on literally 30 flat. So after that, I was like, ended up leaving the training group I was with. And that's when I kind of, and I was with Des actually in July in Michigan, kind of spent a weekend with her and her husband, Ryan, in Northern Michigan. And she was like, dude, she won't, like, you've been talking about this for a while. Like, you should just go get it. Like, you can talk about all you want, but it's like, if you have the opportunity to go get it, like, go do it. You know, you've been talking about it. I know you want it. And Plasma College Coach kind of echoed the same thing to me. Cause I called them on the drive up from, you know, Detroit up to Northern Michigan where Ryan and Des have their place. So the plan was like, one, go get my Olympic trials qualifier, and two, go get the world record. So, it was essentially just a glorified marathon block with just kind of extra mileage sprinkled in. So, you know, for me, I've responded pretty well to high mileage, you know, under Hansen's, prior to the trials in 2020, hit 140 miles a week, for a few weeks, not a lot, but here, like this build, I'm like, I'm going to go get up to 135, 140, 145 and hit it consistently. So there was a stretch of, you know, 4 weeks in like July, August, where I was 140 to 145 straight through. The surrounding weeks around that were, you know, 135, 130. So just very, very, very consistent hard work built the block with kind of additional mileage. Whereas, you know, like a typical marathon workout might be, you know, like 8 to 10 by a mile. You know, I was doing 12 by a mile, or, you know, versus 10 by a K, I was doing 15 by a K. Just kind of longer reps. And just kind of big days. You know, there are certain days where my biggest day was 35 miles. So it was like it was a session in the morning, kind of marathon, all like, you know, long warm up, 6 mile warm up, you know, 5 to 6 miles at marathon pace, you know, a couple miles easy, back at it for 5-6 miles of marathon pace, easy, you know, more miles of marathon pace, cool down for 28, double in the afternoon for 7 to make 35. So it was just a lot of big block days. Like even yesterday, you know, my day was just 25 steady, ran 25 at 5:48 pace yesterday, then doubled for 5 miles in the afternoon to get 30 on the day.
Wow.
So it was just getting just additional mileage like that. But also too, for me and just my background, just kind of the aerobic base I built just honestly over the years of running competitively. I've always kind of had that engine. So it's just like, how can we make marathon pace, 50 mile pace feel easy? And it was going back to those VO2 sessions. So really even this build, it was, you know, once a week I'm still on the track doing some pretty aggressive work. Whether it's like one of my favorite sessions is like 10 by 800, 100 meter jog, 300, really hard. You know, it's like 800 at 5K. It's like 216 to 220, 100 meter jog, 300 in like 46 seconds. Then repeat that 10 times, you know, so you're still doing some very aggressive VO2, almost mile pace work. But ultimately for me, it's I respond well to that. Then it makes 5:10 pace for a marathon feel really easy. And if I can run 5:10 pace, I know I can run 5:40 pace for a really long time. And then just kind of stack the additional mileage, you know, on top of that with the double runs, you know, I double every single day, besides Monday. So like today I just ran an easy 14 this morning, with some of my friends. And then, I see my massage therapist on Monday. So get in a long session with him. So Mondays are my recovery day, but every other day it's, you know, doubling of, you know, 14 and six, 14 and four, 15 and five type days. So, just stacking the mileage, just make sure I have the legs to do, to go the distance, but also to like, make sure I have the speed to also make going that distance at that pace feel easy.
Wow. One very important point you mentioned, you said you were injured and, you were doing cross training, and from there you started and went on to create the world record. Now, this is not easy. When you were cross training, how your cross training looked like, because the moment people get injured, they are so depressed that they almost stop training anything and they get detrained as a result. How would you suggest someone taking care of their injuries? I'm not saying from a sports physiotherapist or physician point of view, because we are not, but more as an athlete, when you're injured and you can still cross train, how should your cross training be looking like, for example?
Yeah. So for me personally, and I have a different kind of mentality with all of it. Like I got injured, okay. like when I first got the diagnosis, I mean, like I cried because like I had the US championships, 50K championships, like a month later I was supposed to do. Like it was pretty devastating, but at the same time it was also just motivating. It's like, all right, let's come back from this and go see what we can do on the other side. So for me, it was just like, no matter what. And again, in the back of my head, I was like, I want to go break this world record, even though it's probably in 2023 now, like no way it's going to happen this year, like maybe 2 years away, 3 years away. But it's like, what can we do to help that, or help get your OTQ in the marathon? And it was just like, go put in the hours, you know, it was miserable. Like I associate biking or swimming with being injured, but that's all I could do if I wanted to stay fit and lift, you know, hit the gym, kind of re-strengthen everything, callus everything. So that was really my mentality. And really it's kind of funny, where, you know, I went out and bought a nice road bike, definitely didn't need it, but wanted it just to like get excited about cross training, you know? And for me, like mentally just like, okay, cool. Like if you're going to go try to break the 50 mile world record, that's 4 hours and 50 minutes. So like a 4 hour bike ride shouldn't bother you, man. Like that's like, you should be able to go easily bike 4 hours, or like you should be able to go aqua jog at the pool for 3 hours. Cause that's, you're still going to have, you know, almost 2 hours to run if you're going to go for this record. Or it's like, even a marathon, you're running 2 hours and 15, 16 minutes. Like that in the pool or a bike should not bother you. So go do it. And it was just, for me, it was just break it down day by day. And that's how I did it, because it was really 13 months between races. And as hard as it was just like, just do one more day. Like you can do one more day of a 5 hour bike ride and 20 minutes of core. That's just one day, dude. Like that's all you got to worry about. Check that box. You'll worry about tomorrow when you wake up, you know? And that's just how I approached it. And obviously it's like, I'm on the other side now. So it's like, you know, we did it, we got through it, but it was at the time it was mentally draining, but you just got to break it down. And do what you can. Just attack the day is definitely my advice to those people that are, you know, get injured or struggling. Like, don't get discouraged. Like, you're going to come out, you know, just make sure you're resting, sleeping. And for me too, it was just like, I hate feeling lazy and out of shape. So it was just kind of motivating me to just stay in shape, truthfully, as best I could to make running as easy as it could be when I was able to hit the ground again. So that's my advice. So just don't, like, don't let it stress you out too much. You'll get back. Just take it day by day. Yeah. And truthfully, that's all it was. And it was, you know, a year of day to day, you know?
Fantastic. No, it's so important to have this attitude, because one, runners or athletes are very competitive. And when they hit the low in any form, including injury, it at times becomes very devastating. But I think what's important is how do you come back up and still make sense of the opportunity from that adversity that you get, and still you're able to train, like what you said. Find things that are rewarding enough that motivate you. And if, for example, you got a cool bike that you thought you're going to spend, you didn't need it, but you wanted it. And I think that helps for sure. So people should take a point or two from it. Now, before we get to the world record experience, how was your nutrition during training, especially when you are running those many miles on a daily basis, you're doing the long runs? And this is a question that keeps coming for people when they train for the marathons. How should they look at their fueling during the long runs, during the training, so that they're adapted to go and have similar nutrition experience when they are racing during a marathon race?
Yeah. So I'll kind of take it in kind of two areas. So there's my diet that I just have on a regular basis. Then there's obviously the race fueling. So like for me, and this is when obviously when you're racing, you don't want to have any stomach discomfort or anything like that. So for me, it's like I eat. So yeah, going and training, you want to set yourself up for success there, but also making sure you have your bases covered just on a daily basis with nutrition. So for me, I eat the same meals. Like the first three meals of the day are the exact same. It's boring, but it works. Cause I just know how my stomach responds when I am running, if that's what I've had during that day, if that makes sense. So for me, it's, you know, in the morning pre-run, it's bread with nut butter, with honey drizzle, make my pour over coffee, then I have a ketone shot before I go run. That's just typical easy day. If it's before like a workout, I'll have an extra, you know, liquid carbs in Bare Performance Nutrition's G1M. I'll have that with some extra electrolytes. And maybe just like they have a caffeine supplement called InFocus, which also helps just like give a little, you know, caffeine boost, helps you kind of focus on the workout. But that's really the key, like just for an easy run, is just that bread, nut butter, coffee, ketone shot, go run, come back. And this is definitely like nutritionists would probably be like, that's not, you should definitely have more. And if I'm hungry, I do, but I make the same smoothie. Like I have a Vitamix blender, you know, after every run, I have just a massive smoothie. It's like, almond milk, spinach, bananas, blueberries, strawberries, protein powder, collagen, sometimes creatine, just load it like stuffing the blender with all this, you know, blending it up. And usually too, like the bananas are frozen too, so it gets pretty thick and frothy. So like I can fill up like almost two big, like 16 ounce cups of it, you know, someday. So it's a lot of like liquid. Yeah. But I know too, like I'm getting a ton of nutrients from it. I'm getting the protein. So typically that's all I'll have after my morning run. If I'm still hungry, I have like a handful of granola, have an extra like, you know, bread and nut butter if I'm still hungry, but I just know like it sits well, it satisfies me. I have really enough calories in that. And then going into lunch, I just have a tuna salad wrap, cranberry apple tuna that I buy at Whole Foods, throw in a tortilla with an apple. Sometimes I'll sip electrolytes. So that's my lunch. So going into my second run, I know my stomach will be great for my second run. Dinner obviously varies depending. Like if I have a workout, I'll typically just go like fish, rice, and then a veggie. Like just tonight, I don't have a workout tomorrow, but tonight was literally mushrooms, peas, kind of sauteed with some also onions, salmon, and white rice with some aminos on it. Like that was my dinner. So pretty standard. I know it's just going to sit well in the morning. So that's again my typical day. And I guess post-saccharin also take just, it's a greens, reds, and this product called IntraFlight, which helps with muscle soreness. Take that for my second run. It's all from Bear Performance Nutrition, BPN. They're my supplement sponsor. Again, I'm not sure on the exact calories, truthfully. I don't really count calories. I just know kind of how I feel when that's my diet. And I train at a high level, recover well. So that's what works for me. So that hopefully just sets me up for success when I do get into these races where I am doing bottles and gels and ketone shots. So for me, when it comes to that, obviously it's something that if you can maximize nutrition during a marathon and ultra marathon, like you're only going to, that's going to help your performance and maximize your performance. So, you know, for me, it was just religiously like practicing, like getting down G1L, which is BPN's carb mix, their electrolytes and also just their gels, like making sure they sit well. So just putting into practice, there's a pretty fortunate out in Boulder. There's a loop called the Monarch loop. It's a 2.97 mile loop. So like, every marathon, every 5K, we have our bottles, you know? So for me, it was like, I had some very specific long runs where it's like, I'm going to set up the table on the loop, you know, start the loop, and every 5K, like run by, like, boom, sip it, you know, finish it, you know, throw the bottle at the corner, you know, near the parking lot, you know, like, and then grab it when you're done. So super, super easy. So it was just like religiously put into play, you know, testing out how many carbs I can take, how it feels, you know, like how quickly am I drinking it? You know, what gels sit the best, all that. And it was, you know, really, so this build, there were purposely four different runs where I had the bottle set up. Even some of my runs where they're broken up, where it's like, go do a warm up, change shoes. Lots of them, I'll just like do a quick drills, light jog and go run and not change shoes. Like put on my shoes right away, my racing flats, and go. It's like when I do that, I'd still make sure like I had a bottle at the start and finish it, that just so it's in my stomach and my stomach's used to having the fluid in there. Yeah, they purposely had said, you know, 3-4 kind of almost simulator sessions where I'm running close to marathon pace at the end for 23, 24, 25 miles, while also getting nutrition every roughly every 5K, you know, 3 miles. And it was going to be, once I found out like what was sitting well, like that's the rotation that I use for my marathon. And just kind of plug and played, and I guess copy and paste it as, you could say for the 50 miles. Well, obviously a little different, with the aid stations and all that, but I just knew how G1M sat, how the ketone sat, how the gel sat, and how I wanted to kind of use that. So, but for me though, it also starts with like, it's my daily nutrition and how I'm like fueling up, making sure I have enough carbs, protein to recover, and also have enough, you know, for the next day's work. And then also making sure I know how my stomach handles the in-race, you know, nutrition. I guess, you know, this is just water and electrolytes stuff, but just bottle as an example, I guess.
Got it. Do you try to hit a particular number per hour that you want to achieve in terms of calories, or do you just go as per you feel?
It's so really, so like, I ended up adding it up. I had right around, so per, I guess, hour with the 50 miler, I did end up averaging just under 100 calories an hour, which is quite a lot for the marathon. I wish I had the numbers in my head, but like
100 calories an hour, 100 gram,
you know, per hour there, or sorry, 100 carbs an hour, 100 grams of carbs.
Yeah. Got it.
Yep. And so for the marathon, it was a little less, right around 80 or so, but still trying to get that amount. And so like with the 50 mile, I was just like loading up kind of really as much as possible. And like every station that I hit, in the 50 mile had, it was roughly every 5 miles. There were kind of odd distances because there's different like cut across roads on the trail. But it was just like getting as many calories as you can, there. Whereas like with the marathon, it's like typically I found that my stomach kind of goes in waves where it's like, if I throw too much in right away, it's going to feel like disgusting. So I'll take like a lot of carbs early in a gel and in a carb mix. And then the next one might just be like electrolytes, just to kind of keep me hydrated. And the next one I'll come back with a lot of carbs. Whereas in the 50 mile, just kind of like, just keep hitting it and keep getting the calories in if it's sitting well. It's kind of how it plays.
Nice. And I think it just fits so well with the how almost everyone who does great does it consistently in their training before they're trying it on the D-Day. And that's so important. So thank you for driving that message home. It's so important that you should simply not just go to a race and try and take the gels that are available on the course. They may be great, but they're sponsored. They're for by the organizers that have been given. They may or may not work for you. So I think the right strategy could be that stick to what you have trained with, and that will more often than not work better for you. Now, moving from here and going to your world record, it just seems like everything was planned so well that the record had to happen. But I wanted to understand, did it transpire to be the same way? Did it come out exactly how you imagined for it to be? And how did the race go for you? Did you pace with someone or did you run on your own? How were you feeling in terms of your motivation? Were you anxious? Were you excited? Looking at your personality, I'm sure you had this mindset, let's go kill it. But was this anything else that was happening with you and you thought, what if I don't get it?
You know, it was truthfully, it was just like, it was just go get it. Like that was my mentality. Like just kind of, and I don't know why this like came to my head, but it's just like, just tunnel vision, just go handle business and get out of there. You know, that was the goal. It's like, this is something you've had on your mind for 2 years. You've been talking about it. My girlfriend's sick of me saying I'm going to break it now. You know, she's just rolling her eyes every time I say I'm going to get it. You know, my family's been hearing it for a while. You know, threw some teasers out there to my teammates, you know, posted about it the day before, but it's like, all right, you've been talking about it. Like now go do it. Like, all right, tough guy. Like you talk a big game. Like, can you do it? So my mentality was just go execute the race plan. And going in, it was like, I knew just from training, you know, I'd run a 2:16 marathon as a workout, got my trials qualifier a month before as a workout, warm up, cool down, but after the marathon running 2:16, tied my PR to the exact second. So I knew I was really fit. I knew I could run, you know, 5:12 pace very easily. So it's like, let's go see. And this is kind of the plan that I put together with Dez. So, you know, right now I'm mostly self-coaching, but if I have questions, my first text is Dez, just about workouts, about training, mileage, anything like that. And she's like, you know, I think it'd be smart. And I had this idea already and I brought it to her. She's like, I think that's smart. My plan was go run 5:40 to 5:45. The record's 5:48 pace. But at the same time, it's like, we're going to want some time in the bank just because it's unknown. You know, like I'm pretty confident that I could say I could go run 30 to 35 miles at 5:40, even in Boulder right now, you know, just like, but it's, you still have 10 miles to go, 15 miles to go, you know? So let's go have some time in the bank just in case things do go south. So going in, that was the plan. Just go tunnel vision, execute, like just go get the job done. Like go handle business. Like it's kind of assassin's mentality. Just go get it, execute, be done. So that was just go get it. So, you know, the race really progressed where, you know, went out, I did it all solo. There was no one near me the entire time. And kind of executed, I don't want to say to perfection, but pretty dang close, where I ended up going out a little too hot. You know, I did average like 5:36, 5:37 for the first 26 miles or so. Where my first mile above 5:40, kind of in the range I wanted, was mile 25, and it was like a 5:40 flat. So I had a lot of time in the bank to work with. And I just, you know, the entire time I'm like, you're ahead of it. Just kind of mentally juicing myself up. Like, cool. You're through a marathon. You got a lot of time in the bank. You know, you've run 24 miles at 5:30 pace in Boulder. You only have 24 miles left here and you only need average at this point, you know, like 6 flat and you got it. And the thing too, is like the course gets harder on the back half because you're climbing essentially for 10 miles, nothing steep, but it's just gradual the entire way up at Tunnel Hill. So I knew, I'm like, I just got to put in a lot of work here. Get to the top where the tunnel, the rail trail tunnel is, kind of get to the turnaround on the other side of that, and then turn around. Then you go back up the tunnel. Then it's roughly, you know, 8-9 miles gradual, like a perfect downhill. It's like nothing steep, just very, very gradual. So that was really just the game plan. Obviously, like I put a lot of work in on the uphill from like 30 to 40 roughly, just maintaining pace. And I was starting to get tired. I started getting really fatigued about 34 miles, but at the same time, I'm like, you've done 16 miles in Boulder at, you know, 5:40 pace. Like you got this. So it's like, just stay committed here. Cause when you get to that top turnaround spot, the last turnaround, you're going home. You have 10 miles just to get back and slightly downhill. So you have it. So that was my mentality, was just incrementally break it down. and I did it, you know, almost to perfection and relatively well, you know. Just kept clicking it off, and, you know, mentally I'm just looking forward to that next bottle, to that next aid station. And when it got really hard at roughly about 34, you know, I had about 3 miles to my next bottle, you know, where I had you know, some carb mix and some gels, or and a gel just taped to the bottle. I'm like, just work hard here. You can hold this for 2 more miles. You're going to get that bottle. You're going to feel way better. You know, then I get to my bottle and obviously I'm like, finish it. You'll feel better. You know, just telling myself that. And you don't feel better right away, but you're like, give it 5 minutes and you'll feel better. And I don't feel any better really. Well, so then I'm like, well, you only have 4 more miles to the next bottle or to the turnaround. At that point, it's like, cool, you can do this for 4 more miles. That's easy. So just mentally breaking it down, like mile by mile, like rep by rep, and just kind of like making these little deals with myself, like saying like, just make it to this point and you'll feel way better, you know? So I was just kind of my mentality throughout and really just like broke it down and just stuck to the plan really. And obviously ended up positive splitting it, but you know, it worked out where, you know, had enough time in the bank where I had enough time to essentially blow up. You know, my last miles 47 and 48 were both 6:30s, you know, like I was genuinely blowing up, but got it done. So.
Awesome. 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 And I guess you had huge grace available with you. So even if you were blowing up, you still had time, to get very well within the record time that you wanted. So outstanding. And I guess as you talked about these things, we can so relate with it. It just resonates with all of us, right? Whenever a beginner starts to run or walk even, one of the things I see and say that look for the next possibly traffic line, or look for the next spot or the car, walk till there, and then you can stop. Then when you reach there, you set the next goal, etc. I guess these finding these small milestones work so well with your motivation, and it just keeps you also slightly distracted with the pain that the body is feeling, and you don't get sucked into that. So I guess from your example, you resonated with all of us so well, because this is exactly what goes through most of our minds as well. Are there any learnings that you would like to narrate to our listeners who want to take up ultra running, for example, or who want to take up any challenge for that matter? What will be the, every time I end up having a conversation, people ask me to ask, what are the secret sauce? And I already see the secret sauce is in the hard work, in the consistency, right? But I think it will be better coming from you. What would you suggest to people?
Yeah. So for me, I mean, if you want to like take a dive into whether it's your first 5K, your first 10K, half marathon, marathon, ultra, it's like, just set up the, you know, set yourself up for success with it. So, and just be able to like be excited and not afraid to put in the work, kind of like you said, like embrace being tired, embrace like the early mornings, the hard workouts, like enjoy the process of it. Cause like, you'll find that you get a ton of satisfaction from just getting out the door and starting. You know, the hardest thing in this sport is just like, for me, even sometimes, like it's my job. There's some days where I'm just like, I'm tired for the morning before the workout before, or like the day before, like, I don't want to lace up my shoes to go slog for, you know, 5-6 miles for a second run. It's like, you just got to start and get out the door. So that's my thing. It's just like, just start. The hardest thing is taking that first step, and you'll find like after that first step, it's easy. You're already out there, you're doing it. And then you're going to start hitting, like I said, those little milestones. Like, oh yeah, you know, I ran 3-4 miles, but it's like, maybe I can go 5 the next day. It's like, ooh, maybe I can start doing like mini sessions. You just build upon that first step and just keep stacking and stacking and stacking. Like I said, then you just mentally, you're able to break everything down a little easier, you know, like I was talking about earlier. So that's probably my biggest advice is like, just go take that first step and like, you know, get a race, get a goal that sounds exciting, something that you like truly you want to do, that you like is a big goal of yours, and just take that first step towards it and just keep taking those steps. It's probably my biggest advice to anyone that wants to get into it, you know, whether it is, like I said, first 5K to your first ultra, and just embrace those, all the steps along the way.
Fantastic. What's the next goal for you from here? Now you have the 50 mile world record. What is the new greatness that you want to get towards?
Yeah. So the first thing is, you know, like I'm always on the next thing really. So like I got the 50 mile world record, was obviously, it was a cool moment, but I was already like, cool, now I got to get ready for the US Olympic marathon trials. So that's the next thing in running. But for me, what got me the most excited now is like, I can confidently say, and no one's going to, you know, prior to me saying like, I want to break the world record, I was like, okay, go do it. Like everyone kind of, there's a little bit of question there to it, but but now I can confidently go say that, like, I want to go try to win the World 100K Championships at the end of next year. I want to try to win Comrades, whether that's, you know, this coming year or, you know, a year after. And really, I want to go break the, I want to, one, lower my 50-mile record, and two, I want to go break the 100K record as well. So I think those are both attainable. You know, I was on 4:42 pace for a while, you know, until everything blew up, and but I did it, you know, on my own. So I think if I have proper pacing and all that to, like, be a little more controlled early, I think I can take more time off that. You know, hopefully go get a world title, like I said, at the 100K, and add another world record to the resume too at 100K. So that's the, you know, probably next 2 years of work, 3 years. So, and then we'll see after that. But that's the, those are the big kind of, you know, circles up out there for me.
Nice. That's good enough to aim for. And I guess that's in the foreseeable future. We'll be rooting for you, and we'll hope that you get there, and we'll speak again. In the meantime, we'll be in touch. Thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you so much for, I know it's almost your bedtime, and accepting to speak here. This is of great value, and I'm sure our listeners will value this greatly as well.
No, it was awesome, and yeah, you're right. I'm about to go do some mobility and then go to sleep, but this is a great way to spend my evening for sure. So appreciate you having me on, man.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. It was fantastic, isn't it? I enjoyed so much speaking with Charlie, not because he is so great in racing, but because almost everything he told is not rocket science, right? It is doable. It's just these small, small, monotonous, mundane things that you need to keep doing every day, almost every day. You don't need to do great things every day. You need to do small things consistently, and all of these coming together will become great. I hope you learned a thing or two for sure. And I hope you're getting out of the door right now and go and get your runs in right away. Good luck, and I'll speak with you guys next week again. Bye.